When one cannot go to support an action directly, how can one still support that action? Napoleon, or maybe it was Frederick the Great, famously commented that an army marches on its stomach. And what is meant by that is that the quartermasters are just as important as the soldiers. Another way to say this is that in battle, in World War II, for example, I believe it was only about 10% of the soldiers ever fired their gun in battle. The vast majority of soldiers were clerks or truck drivers or people who delivered munitions or medics or cooks or something else. And that is a pretty common figure, about 10%, or often less. I think it was only about 3% of the IRA ever picked up weapons. And the vast majority of any, well, let's back up too, and let's think about a professional basketball team or a professional baseball team. You not only have the players, you've got all the minor leaguers, you've got the coaches, you've got the trainers, you've got the dietitians, you've got the people who sell tickets, you've got the groundskeepers, you've got all these others. It takes, or in a movie does not just consist of, Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. I mean, the movie consists of, there are gaffers and best boys and stunt people and editors and caterers. So the point is that to accomplish anything, there are very few accomplishments that people actually do solo. Most of us require support in whatever we are doing. And that support work is just as important as the more glorious aspects. And my friend Leah Keith often says that what an activist movement needs is two things. It needs loyalty and material support. And so, for example, right now there are people, primarily indigenous people, but some non-indigenous people, who are opposing a pipeline that is growing across their land. And of course, every pipeline goes across indigenous land, but we'll leave that aside for a moment. And for those for whom, for any number of reasons, they cannot go there to be there physically, there are a near infinite number of things they can do. They can write letters to the editor locally. They can advocate in one way or another for them. They can send them supplies. I mean, the people actually on the front lines still need to eat, and they are going to have, shoes that fall apart, or they're going to tear a hole in their jeans, or they're going to get sick. There are all sorts of, so look, when we were attempting to stop timber sales, we would sometimes be having to work very hard to meet a deadline. We would have until midnight to finish our appeal. And there was a post office that stayed open till midnight back then for whatever reason. And we would oftentimes be working as hard as we can. And we've been working for hours and hours on this thing. We've only got 2 hours left to go and we're actually really hungry. So somebody has to go get some food. And that's just as important as the person who drives it to the airport where the post office was. That's just as important as the person who writes it up. And So there's physical material support is very important. And then there's also the notion that a guerrilla army swims in the ocean of the people, and you need to develop support among the people in order to have a guerrilla army. And that's not just true of a guerrilla army, but that's also true of activism, that we need to raise public support for our positions. And I've thought often of an experiment I heard about, which was called something like the second person experiment. I don't remember what it was, but they had a bunch of people sitting in a room like a doctor's office. And then they would have a couple of people come in who were part of the experiment. And one person would, for example, say something very racist. They wouldn't believe it. They would just say it as part of the experiment. And then what they found was that the response of everybody else in the room was very heavily influenced by the response of the second person, by which the second person in on the experiment, let's say the first person says something really racist, and the second person says, hey, yeah, it's pretty funny, that's great. Everybody else in the room is much more likely to respond positively than if the second person says, you know, that's not really very cool. And I think about that a lot. And in fact, it just came up in a very, very, very small way in this past week. I'm on a email list in my neighborhood. It's a neighborhood watch list where they will announce when there is, when somebody gets their house burgled or something, they will say, everybody watch out. There was somebody burgling a house. They were seen leaving it in a black, you know, Nissan Sentra, whatever. And so that's pretty handy. But another thing that the people running the list do, which kind of annoys me, is they will complain every time anybody in the neighborhood sees a mountain lion or a bear. And they will say, we need to call Fish and Game and get rid of the animals because the mountain lion was seen carrying a gray kitty. And nothing personal, the gray kitty sitting over there inside the house. And they've been doing this a lot, and I kept silent, and finally just couldn't keep silent anymore. And I wrote a very nice note saying, you know, we need to remember that we're in their homes. And if you have a cat and you let a cat outside, that's the risk you're taking. And the mountain lion or the bear should not be harmed because of a risk that you took and that your cat took. You know, never mind that cats kill birds. We'll leave that aside. And it was a very nice note, but it had to be said because I wanted to break the hegemony of that. And it's the same on the larger scale, that not only must we, you know, there's the line which I'm totally going to mangle about, by, I believe it was Gandhi, about how, what, at first they laugh at you and then they, no, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they oppose you and then you win or something like that. And I think this is awfully simplified, but it is really true that somebody has to go out and say something, and then somebody else has to repeat it, and somebody else has to repeat it until it starts gaining a cultural currency. And so there are an infinite number. Well, let's think about this too in terms of the attempts to support the indigenous people opposing the pipeline. Is if they had, you know, 50,000 people show up, that would be great. But if they had 50,000 people show up and they had nobody show up with a porta potty and they had nobody show up with food, this 50,000 people thing would last about 6 hours and leave a mess. You know, it's like you need the support in order to have a long-term campaign. That's absolutely crucial. It's just as crucial as anything else. And so what can people do who are not there on the front lines? They can donate. Hell, you know, I have a friend who is an accountant who part of her activist work is she does accounting for various organizations that need accounting. I mean, that's something you have to do too, especially if you're going to have a nonprofit. You have to have a 501c3, means that you have to go through all that stuff. It's nice to have somebody who can navigate that territory. I don't care what your skills are. If you're a good writer, I mean, they need writers. If you're a good cook, they need good cooks. If you're a good accountant, they need good accountants. And we need, it is so true. I so get so tired of being called the quote violence guy because I talk about resistance. But the truth is we need everything. We need school teachers. We need accountants. We need cooks. We need people who sew, sewers. We need everything. And actually, I do want to add one more thing, which is that I want to challenge everybody who's listening to this that I would like for you to take at least 1 hour every week and do some form of activism or support for somebody else's activism. And if you can't, oh, actually, I'm going to tell a story, which is how I got started as an activist, which is when I was about 24, 25, or 26, I realized I wasn't paying enough for gasoline. And I wasn't covering the social and economic costs. And so every time I would buy gas, I was going to donate a dollar. For every dollar I spent on gas, I would donate a dollar to a local environmental organization because they need it. But I didn't have any money. I was completely unemployed and not had very, very little money. And so what I would do instead is I would give myself a choice, either pay a dollar for every dollar of gas, or you can pay yourself $5 an hour to do activism. And so if I spent $10 on gas, I would either give $10 to a local organization, or I would do 2 hours worth of activism. And so I want to challenge everybody to do that, to, take some amount and either give a tithe of, $10 a week to some local organization, or do 2 hours of work for a local organization, or 1 hour of work. Everybody can take 1 hour away from their life. I don't care how busy you are. You can take 1 hour and you can write a letter. You can go to a protest. You can help start assembling a package. You can do just that much to start. It's a wonderful start.